Little Emily biting her sister, or is teenage Barry refusing to help around the house? Consulting psychologist David Carey joins us to answer all your parenting woes. David Carey joins us once again. David, good afternoon.
Hello, Sean.
Your first question is this. We have a 9-year-old girl who will not acknowledge people, say hello, answer questions, etc. from others, even if she knows them well. She advises us when we ask her why she didn't say hello and she didn't see the person. We're starting to notice that she's not being invited to parties or play dates. We're blue in the face advising her to say hello when spoken to use the person's name, but to no avail. She has been like this from a very young age and we're quite concerned that she's being isolated socially because of it. Can you give us any advice?
She's been like this from a very young age and she's 9, so this is going to be difficult to change. Now, we have lovely aspects to the primary school curriculum. One, SPHE, social, personal, and health education. And we also have a very rich drama education syllabus. Both of those can be used interchangeably, conjoint, concurrent, to help young children who are shy or who lack certain social intelligence and social graces. In addition to which, we have a very, very fine syllabus for the Irish language, which focuses on communication as a device to teach the language, as opposed to vocabulary drill and grammar drill. So we have three pieces of a curriculum that can be used very exquisitely, delicately, and in a well-balanced way to help children like this. I would suggest to these parents, have a chat with classroom teacher. I'd also be interested if the child answers questions in class. Does she speak with her classmates during free time? What is she like in terms of playtime out in the yard on breaks, etc.? How well is she getting on during assemblies? No doubt there are probably Christmas plays and pageants and whatnot, and opportunities for her to be on a stage and speaking or performing or doing something in front of a large audience. So I think there's ample opportunities to correct this. Parents, by zeroing in on it and focus, can cement the problem rather than loosen it up. So I don't know exactly how they're dealing with it, but they're now blue in the face. Probably putting a little bit too much emphasis on it. Sounds like shyness to me, Sean.
Yeah, it does, really. It does, the poor little thing.
Yeah.
My 4.5-year-old says he doesn't like school. He says that no one wants to play with him, and he gets very upset every morning when he gets up to go to school. His teacher thinks we're giving too much importance to his dislike to school and has discouraged us from talking to him about his day. I'm considering taking him out altogether and trying again in a different school next year. Am I overreacting?
I don't know. Teacher's advice may be very sound, but I don't know all the details. If it is a fact that no one wants to play with him, that needs a little bit of investigation. Now, I would wager teacher is probably fairly observant of these dynamics. Most of our infant teachers are extremely well-versed in children's development and have opportunities throughout the school year to observe them at free play in the classroom and on yard and break time. I think some observation is necessary. If you have trust in the teacher and he or she is telling you, look, this really isn't a problem, don't pay too much attention to it, try taking that advice for a while. Nothing to lose.
No.
Nothing to lose.
4.5, is that kind of young to be going to school anyway?
Well, no child should be in a junior infant classroom at age 4 to 4.5. And I don't know if, in fact, this child is in junior infants or is in a Montessori or a play school, a preschool setting. We don't know that piece of information. Yes, in terms of the way the curriculum is structured and designed, regrettably, it's not particularly developmentally appropriate. Far too little emphasis on play, free exploration of the environment inside and outside of the classroom, and far too much focus on, and we've covered this so many times, ad nauseum, you know, pencils in hands, writing their name, A is for apple, and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I have a 15-month-old who, when angry and frustrated, will butt the ground quite severely. It's a habit now, and I'm concerned about it. He's not yet walking and not talking. If I let him out of my arms, he reverts to headbutting.
Well, he can't revert to headbutting all the time, so it's only when he's frustrated.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you have carpeting on the floor? That might soften the blow a little bit. This is a typical kind of self-regulation issue for a child who doesn't have words yet to express their emotional state.
Yeah.
And therefore gets overwrought. I think all you can do in situations like this is, one, recognize that, yeah, this will stop eventually once language develops and you begin to say to him, use your words. And when you notice that frustration is building, there are often your early warning signs before the actual headbutting. You have to notice it and distract and comfort and find out what's distressing him so much, by the way. What are the things that are causing him to bang his head on the ground? Is it happening at the slightest provocation, certain times of the day, under certain conditions?
You do. I think when they're that age, you kind of know the things that, you know, they mightn't like baths or, if they're restricted from playing with the knives in the kitchen or whatever, you know. But there's always things that they start going, oh my God, this is the worst thing you've ever done to me.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Any kind of restriction or loss of a favored opportunity is catastrophic at that age, you know. And once catastrophe sets in, you have an extreme stress, terror reaction. And that's what's going on with this little fellow. I think you just need to put in some cautionary measures and observe very carefully. It will pass. No, it really will, particularly as language begins to develop more eloquently.
Please ask David, what is the best way to teach my 3.5-year-old girl to be gentle and kinder to her new baby sister? I understand that jealousy is bound to be an issue, but she's very rough with her, to the point that she laughs when she hurts her and makes her cry. I'm constantly watching her and telling her to be careful and to be gentle, but she takes no notice. What's the best way to deal with this issue?
Now, I'm concerned about something here, Sean. I'm concerned about the fact that the little girl laughs when she hurts her sister and makes her cry. Now, is this laughter of embarrassment and guilt to cover up that she made a mistake and was a little bit too rough, or is it genuine laughter of enjoyment at hurting another person? They're two very different things, one being extremely troubling at that age, and one being just a reaction to having made a little bit of a mistake. I think it might be helpful to get her, maybe she already has her own, but I think it might be very helpful to get her a little doll.
Yeah.
And let her know that this is something that needs love, care, and attention, and it's hers. She's going to have to nurture it, take good care of it, make sure its hair is brushed, make sure it gets a nice bath every once in a while, the soap suds don't get in the eye, et cetera, et cetera. Put it into bed, tuck it into bed. She needs some opportunity to learn some more gentle skills. Now, there's another road we could go down here. It's interesting. Does this child, meaning the older child here, who's 3.5, have some real difficulty controlling her movements? Does she have difficulties in what's called motor planning, knowing and being able to execute what to do next? Does she not know her own strength and the perhaps tightness of her grip, et cetera? There's a lot of variables here. As is so often the case, more observation, more scrutiny can lead you down the right path. But I think as a beginning, a little doll, you go choose it with her, let her pick it out, one that she's going to take care of, and it's all hers, special, just to look after. See how she does with that.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I have a 9-year-old boy who struggles with his emotions. He continually cries in school over the smallest things and is affecting his relationship with other children. This is the same at home, and any critic of his homework results in tears and he complaining about how mean we are for hurting his feelings. I'm really worried and afraid that if we can't address this now, we'll become even a greater problem later.
This is what we call declarations of bankruptcy. In other words, I can't do it. Wah, wah, wah. It's too hard for me. You're picking on me. Wah, wah, wah. We ignore a lot of this behavior. And sometimes we reflect back to the child. It looks to me like you really want to get sympathy from us all the time for not being able to do things.
Yeah.
And that's sometimes all you have to say, because then you're revealing to the child the goal and purpose of their behavior, and that helps them change it a little bit. So at home needs to be selectively ignored. Now, problem in school because there is a social cost.
Yeah.
Particularly with little boys, excuse me, who cry frequently, and other boys don't do that.
Yeah.
So we may need to look at this a little deeper. I don't know. Talk to teacher, find out what's going on. Talk to the boy, see if you can find out what is the root of the problem.
Yeah, he constantly cries in school over the smallest things, and it is affecting his relationship with other children. So as you say, crying when you're a nine-year-old boy probably does have a social cost.
Yeah, definitely has a social cost, yeah. And you can be made fun of, and you can be socially ostracized, and some other children will set you up. So you burst into tears.
Yeah.
There's all these dynamics. I think you need the help of a teacher with some of this.
Yeah.
But certainly in the family home, I wouldn't play into this business of you're mean to me. You've hurt my feelings.
Just on the little girl, going back to that first question we got about the nine-year-old who seems to be very shy around people. Mary says if the little girl won't greet people, make a point of showing her how to do it with each person you stop and talk to. Perhaps greet everyone who comes into your house formally to help teach her. Another texter says my daughter was extremely self-contained and quite shy as a child. It all fell into place as she grew into herself and gained confidence through her own achievements. I would recommend not forcing the issue, which is pretty much what David was saying. And Maria says, my son, who is now a teenager, had difficulty interacting with people. He had Asperger's. We worked with him and encouraged him, and he has definitely improved with age, but is also shy. Everybody is different. Don't put too much pressure on the child, as it can cause anxiety. Next question is, I'm having a very, very difficult time with my son, who will be 7 in April. He keeps wetting the bed. It's impossible to train him. I tried everything, but nothing works. I slept with him for 6 months, lifted him out twice a night, but he still wet the bed. I tried scaling back on drinks, alarms, star charts, you name it. It just won't work. He hates wearing a nappy and keeps taking them off at night. He won't use the toilet, which is beside his room, because he's still half asleep and gets back into bed and wets it. I brought him to the doctor, but no issues were found. He has bad habits now. I'm so frustrated. Please help me.
And I don't know what this bad habits means. Is it something in addition to the bedwetting? I'm afraid there's nothing I can think of that you can do. This is a problem that sometimes occurs, mostly in boys. I've run into a small number, very small number, who bedwet up until age 11 or 12. And it's a real social problem at that age, because you're not going to go to sleepovers, and you're not having sleepovers in your own house. So there isn't much. Go gently. Stop paying a lot of attention to it. I think about the only thing you can do is have that change of bed linen available right there at hand. Restrict liquids at night and fluids, and not just moderate them, but restrict them. Lots of reminders aren't going to help. Scolding is not going to help. You've tried everything. You've gone down the medical route. There's no known problem. Almost always there isn't, by the way.
Yeah.
And there just isn't a lot you could do except wait it out, and it goes away.
Yeah. I wonder, they haven't mentioned an alarm. And when this question's come up before, some people have said it works.
Some people have said it works. Yeah, you might give it a try, but I don't know.
Yeah.
They're using the equivalent of alarm, or they have tried anyway, using the equivalent by getting them up a couple of times a night.
Oh, sorry, she did say alarm. Sorry, my mistake.
Is it there?
Yeah. Drinks,
okay.
Alarm,
oh,
star charts, you name
it. Yeah.
Sorry about that. Apologies.
Look, when you've exhausted every known remedy, then it's time just to calm down, realize it's something that's happening. It will eventually stop. He's just 7, so let's hope by the time he's 9 it's all over and done with.
Yeah.
I think perhaps if you just play it very, very low-key, don't make a big production out of it, soon he'll be of an age where he can change his own bedclothes and get into some new jammies, clean jammies and whatnot. You have that all there for him. Have a special hamper, perhaps outside of the door of his room or in the room where he can put his stuff. You can take it in the morning and it can be laundered. You don't need to have conversations about him. And let's see how it works that way.
Yeah. Now, I know I've told this story before, but one of mine had a similar problem, but it was just that she was just a really heavy sleeper. I just didn't care. So we put her in a bed with her sister, made her, she shared with her sister, and, you know, an elbow in the head cured her of peeing in the bed in short order.
How old was she at the time?
She did until she was 6 or 7.
Really?
You know, but, you know, our sister cured her of it.
And I'm sure her sister was thrilled with you.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. very caring.
Yeah.
My daughter, who's almost four, attends creche and play school. She told me boys in her class were hitting her. I asked the play school if they noticed anything going on, and I was told absolutely not, and the boys in question would be the least likely to be hitting other kids. However, other children in play school have informed the creche leader that she's being hit by boys. What do I do? She generally doesn't tell tall stories.
You need to get back to that creche and you need to find out exactly what's going on. And that means you probably need to, if at all possible, be an unobtrusive observer from time to time, because you're getting evidence here from other children that the girl is being hit, in fact.
Yeah.
Now, just because teacher doesn't notice it doesn't mean it's not happening. Just because teacher thinks these are the least likely culprits doesn't mean they're not the culprit.
Mm.
So if someone else hadn't been reporting that it's going on, I would be saying you're probably just a little bit overexcited about it and leave it and tell her to get on with it. But now some other children are saying she's being hit. Something's happening there. It needs more discussion. It needs very careful observation. And whether it's happening or not, this is a great time for a teacher to talk to the class about respect, about being kind to one another, about helping one another, about not hurting each other's bodies, etc.
Yeah.
It's time for a lesson through a discussion and maybe through some instructional children's book and whatnot.
I have a nearly 12-year-old son in sixth class. He's a happy kid with lovely friends. He also has dyslexia and dyspraxia. My problem is where to send him to school. We, his parents, want to send him to a secondary school, very like the ethos of Educate Together, who believe in looking after the whole child and have excellent resource departments. It also encourages all students to play a sport. My son is very sporty and is good at rugby. The problem is that it's a 45-minute drive there and home, or longer if using public transport. He wants to go to a local community school where his friends are going. They've no organised sport after school, and over the past few years, students have left to go to other schools. On the other hand, his sister goes there and has done very well, but she is very academic and self-motivated. I don't know what to do. I'm losing sleep over it. I look forward to your advice.
Well, sounds like this parent wants me to tell them which school to send their child to, and I am not going to do that.
Mm.
You should listen to your son. I think in the life of every child, there does come a time when they should have some reasonable influence on where they're schooled, so long as they have some reasonably legitimate reason. Now, a bunch of my friends are going there a legitimate reason? It may very well be.
Mm.
And just because the school doesn't have an organized after-school sports program doesn't mean it's not the appropriate place for him. That would be one of the last things I'd be looking for in a secondary school, whether they have an organized after-school sports program. There are far more important variables in the education at second level of children than sports programs.
Yeah.
So I'd be looking at support systems available. This is something that's missing here in the question. Your son has dyslexia and dyspraxia.
Mm.
The most important thing you can do is investigate what support and resources are available in the secondary school of your choosing. Because it's critically important that they be there, that they be in place. It's also going to be very important to have a transition program created for this boy. Now is the time to start transitioning. That means some visits to a secondary school once you decide where you want to send him. That means, I hope, by the way, there's a written individual education plan, sharing it with the receiving secondary school. Once you've done all that, things will proceed smoothly.
Mm. And if an hour and a half a day traveling, at least, and he's 45 minutes away, presumably from you, if you have to get to the school for whatever reason, he's a long way away.
Logistics are important.
Yeah.
But then again, there are lots of secondary school children who travel very long distances to school, and they navigate it quite well, and their parents deal with it. So I've given you some thinking to do about the most important variables in my mind in the life of this child. That is educational supports, resources, and services. Forget about sports availability. That's less important in the long run.
Mm.
He'll do fine. If he can't manage after-school sports because there aren't there. There are numerous clubs.
Of course there must be, yeah.
They're all over the place.
Adele says on the subject of bedwetting, I wet the bed as a child for years until 7 and a lot older. For years, my dad got up at about 2 a.m. in the morning and made the four of us use the bathroom. We all grew out of it. My dad didn't make us feel guilty for wetting the bed. Mom had to do all the washing, so it did stress her out, says Adele. Get him to do lots of crawling. This will strengthen his bladder, says another texter. I've never heard that one before. That's an interesting one.
There's no harm in trying it. I just don't know how you're going to get a seven-year-old to
crawl.
Lots of crawling. But there are games you can play.
Yeah. Somebody else says they went through play therapy with this and that solved it. There you go. Don't know about that. Yeah.
We
also had that question in about that kid who cries a lot in school and also seems to be very sensitive when he's at home. Teacher here, we had a lad in school who cried over every little thing. We gave him a list of things he was allowed to cry about, e.g. falling over or hurting himself. If he cried and it wasn't on the list, he would be given no sympathy and told to cop on. It worked with immediate results.
Well, I don't like the message of cop on, son, but maybe the other part of it might be helpful.
Yeah. We were talking about the inevitable question about a toddler who's headbutting the floor. Grania says, my big brother used to headbutt the floor in temper as a baby. My mom said he did it on the concrete out in the back once and that cured him of it. I suppose it would. One way or the other.
Yes, the other that I'm worried about, Sean. Yes. Yeah.
For bedwetting, try dry Weetabix at night. It helped us. Now, it's not clear whether you eat the dry Weetabix or you put it in someplace else. I'm not sure. And Yvonne says, I love David Carey. Have put the kids in front of the telly so I can have a nice cup of tea in peace and listen to him. Oops, probably a bit ironic indeed. Bad mommy, Yvonne.
No, good mommy, Yvonne. Keep listening.
David, thanks a million for coming in. Listen in every Wednesday at 3 p.m. here on Moncrief for more parenting advice from David Carey.